Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet. I've never said those words before. I'm a little older than that. But we've got that story. Plus, the Internet Archive is now a federal depository library, and I'm kind of concerned. But first, tech billionaires, rogue scientists moving to commercialize CRISPR babies. This from geneticsandsociety.org. Since the CRISPR baby scandal in 2018, no additional genetically modified babies are known to have been born. Now, several techno-enthusiastic billionaires are setting up privately funded companies to genetically edit human embryos with the explicit intention of creating genetically modified children. Heritable genome editing remains prohibited in policies in the overwhelming majority of countries that have any relevant policy to this, and a binding European treaty as well. Support for keeping it legally off-limits, heritable genome editing, is widespread, including among scientists working to develop gene therapies. A number of key opponents and skeptics are taking new steps to make their voices heard. James, it made me back up. Opponents and skeptics in this case being the ones that want to do all this. Bloomberg News reports that Bootstrap Bio, a company created a whole 18 months ago, has hired a chief science officer, opened a lab, and pivoted its work to genetic editing of human embryos. Based on investor information, it says that Bootstrap Bio may be planning to launch human trials, that is, using altered embryos to initiate pregnancies in 2026 or 2027 in Honduras, quote, a place where the company could potentially avoid U.S. regulation. So, James, I guess this time the Nazi babies will be made in Central America, not in South America. Boys from Brazil. Bootstrap Bio is not alone in early June. So again, James, all of this is like a whole 18 months ago, and way back in June, MIT Technology Review reported that Brian Armstrong, the founder of Coinbase, whose worth is estimated at $10 billion, had just posted on X that he's ready to fund a U.S. startup focusing on gene editing human embryos and is looking for gene editing scientists and bioinformatics specialists to form a founding team for the effort. I think the time is right for the defining company in the U.S. to be built in this area, Armstrong posted. It's kind of weird with these crypto bros. Meanwhile, He Jian Kui, the scientist who presided over the creation of at least three genetically modified children in 2018, he's striving to reinsert himself into the limelight and vowing to continue his attempts to create genetically modified babies. You might recall, after being denounced as a rogue, he spent 3 years in a Chinese cage for illegal medical practices. There was a point where we didn't even know, he just disappeared. His prison sentence behind him, he has a new wife, Kathy Tai, a Chinese-Canadian bio-entrepreneur and former Peter Thiel fellow whom Forbes has featured in two of its 30 under 30 lists as chronicled in the MIT Technology Review as Meet Kathy Tai, Bride of China's Frankenstein. And of course, you gotta see dude's account, you know, on the BrainChip social media platform. In short, we've entered a new and more alarming phase in the struggle to orient human biotechnologies towards the common good and to prevent their use in the service of resurgent eugenics based in market incentives, genetic essentialism, and technological recklessness. It's time for the opposition to step up. And James, it just hit me. Imagine if people went up smashing CRISPR labs instead of the No Freaks, but maybe, yeah, we have No Freaks protests instead of the No Kings protests. We have covered CRISPR a lot in the 15 years of New World Next Week. April 11th, 2025, scientists genetically engineer wolves with white hair, muscular jaws, like the extinct dire wolf. That's the most recent. Going back to 2020, two female CRISPR scientists make history, winning Nobel Prize in Chemistry for gene editing discovery. You interviewed Jonathan Latham on gene editing in 2019, and New World Next Week, 2018, scientist announces gene-edited babies goes missing. And we will include just a search for CRISPR on my own, MediaMonarchy.com, and I couldn't find it initially, James. Didn't we cover CRISPR introduces hundreds of unintended cancerous mutations? Is that story gone now? Did I make it up?
I think we did cover it. I was also going through our CRISPR coverage, and there has been an awful lot. And I found one from July of 2022, an episode of Neural Next Week, where it was a related story, CRISPR gene editing may cause permanent damage. So there was that one we were covering. And then I also found in May of 2022, we had a related story on CRISPR cockroaches. A new gene editing breakthrough makes them possible. Yay! Wonderful. So anyway, this is the world that we're stepping into. And I would say we are stepping into this. And now this is a reality, which is coming. But in fact, I think you're right when you started this by saying, well, that we know about, as in, yeah, we know that there was those three gene-edited babies of this He Jang Kui character who went missing, and, oh, I guess he was in jail, and now he's out, and tweeting all sorts of crazy nonsense. But yeah, the real question is, yeah, we know about those three. Do we really think it is only those three? Even those three, I haven't really followed that story since we were covering it initially, but I remember at the time, of course, the identities of those three children were obviously kept private, and all we know is that he was trying to edit them to make them HIV resistant or something along those lines, right? It was a crazy, crazy story, but I kind of just brushed that under the rug. There was those three. He was a rogue scientist. He went to jail. Poof, done. And no government has ever engaged in any sort of experimentation along those lines ever since. Done story. I don't believe that. I would suggest people should reserve their skepticism about that. But yeah, anyway, even if there really is only those three babies, at any rate, this is a reality. It's already happened, and it is going to happen more and more in the future. And don't worry, guys, I'm sure the government regulators will come along to put some brakes on this. This story that we're citing here mentions some of the concerns, this safety concerns, lack of medical needs, social and ethical risks. And I guess that's a good way to start itemizing the problems with something like gene editing babies. How about just let's not tinker with the genome, especially heritable traits? Because if people remember my conversation, I believe it was that conversation with Jonathan Latham where we were talking about gene drive technology. It might have been a separate conversation. But the idea is that you can, of course, you can engineer, for example, mosquitoes so that they all have this one heritable trait. And then over time, that trait gets passed on until they all have that trait, right? Well, why couldn't the same thing be done with humans? And, oh, that will be great. Once we start editing something into the population and over a few generations, every human will have this new trait. Yay, wonderful. Scary stuff. Truly, truly nightmare fiction kind of stuff. And maybe we buried the lead on this because you mention He Jang Kui's crazy Twitter account, but they have some examples in this article. April 15th, good morning, bitches. How many embryos have you gene edited today? April 16th, I literally went to prison for this shit. May 24th, the world owes me a Nobel Prize. June 13th, I am the number one scientist in China. This is the type of stable genius that is engaging in this research. And this is just because he probably is some rogue weirdo who's being very open about this. Who knows what is going on behind closed doors, but I'm willing to bet it's more than what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's always the lone rogue gunman that's always behind something. It's all Fauci. It was all just his fault in 2020 in the scamdemic. We'll take care of that. And the question, remember, we've asked, did they weaponize ticks? Still waiting on that answer from U.S. Congress. And that's how we get going on New World Next Week, episode 599, Netflix to reboot 90s globalist propaganda kids show, Captain Planet. By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet. If you were a kid growing up in the early 90s, then you probably remember flipping through Saturday morning cartoons and stumbling across a weird animated show about a superhero who fights pollution. And probably like most kids, you quickly immediately turn the channel. Captain Planet, infamous for being one of the dorkiest and preachiest cartoons ever made, which just that's saying something now, preached to kids about the virtues of environmental panic and progressive multiculturalism. It was woke before woke was even a word. The cartoon created by globalist magnate Ted Turner and produced by Turner Program Services and Deke Enterprises, DIC. Even if you were a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, you saw the Deke promo logo, production logo at the end. First aired in 1990 at the height of the children's TV entertainment craze because Reagan changed the rules and made it okay to basically advertise toys to kids on TV constantly. The show was decidedly less entertaining and was more condescending in its message. And again, I honestly never watched an episode. I was aware of it. I knew it was on, but I was already a little bit older than that. And honestly, I don't remember it being a Saturday morning thing for me. I feel like it was just like a syndicated show that they maybe ran in on the afternoons on Fox. Turner. Oddly, he's proud of some odd things, oddly proud of the show, and spoke about his hand in its creation with reverence. Billionaire elites often like to imagine they have a deep creative streak when they don't. One might have assured this terrible property would remain buried in the past and well forgotten. However, this latest millennium, Hollywood has zero creativity, suffering immense failure in content creation and desperately digging up any old franchise to rebrand and reboot. And again, when there's three corporations running everything, they already own all the IP for all the characters. Netflix has announced they will be developing a live-action version of the cartoon. James, I didn't even catch that part in prepping this. It's going to be even lamer as a live-action. Maybe it'll be as good as the Lion King and Cats live-action movies they've made recently. With Greg Berlanti and Leonardo DiCaprio as executive producers. Of course, Leo, a well-known climate change obsessive, as he flies his private jets around the world with all his little girlfriends. In the show, Gaia, the spirit of the planet, assembles a team of five young and diverse planeteers from nations around the world. Again, it was multi-culti back in the day. Who can summon Captain Planet, I think, you know, they all put their fists or rings together or something, to help them solve ecological and global problems by their powers combined. Yeah, Wonder Twins, activate. That's more my speed. To understand Captain Planet, though, one must understand Turner's extreme ideology. And James, it does feel like he gets a free pass anymore. We only ever talk about those, you know, Bill Gates and those big bad eugenicists. Ted Turner's been at it a long time, and he's just kind of awkward monkey side eyes away. He's an elitist environmental religion leader of a cult. Stemming from the Club of Rome's limits to growth studies in the 1970s and the launch of government-funded family planning programs to reduce and control the human population. Captain Planet pushed population control often, telling kids that when they grow up, they must not have large families or that'll destroy the Earth unless your name's De Niro or Musk or Baldwin. The cartoon commonly terrified children with images of total destruction wrought by a future with global warming. It is likely that a Netflix reboot of the Captain Planet property will continue the environmental propaganda initiatives of globalists like Ted Turner, who is still alive, by the way, because he wants you to kill yourself for the cause. Certainly not him or Hanoi Jane. Corbett, I don't remember... I certainly don't remember kids being frightened by this. And again, it's maybe because I was a little bit older and I didn't have friends watching this. It never seemed terrifying to me, but I was also young and did not understand the eugenics Malthusian agenda. James, they're going to put stuff in there we've not even probably thought about yet that'll take it times 10.
They are, aren't they? And yeah, thanks for the warning on that, because I thought I could at least just safely file this away as, oh, whatever, propaganda. But actually, it will probably be interesting to see what particular propagandistic messages they are going to be implanting for the next generation. Question mark. You know, James, for the second week in a row, you have triggered a core memory of mine. The Deke production logo. I do recall that from my childhood, but I don't know what from. Maybe He-Man or G.I. Joe or something. I don't know what, whatever. One of those 80s cartoons that I used to watch. But, yes, I certainly did not get Captain Planet. I don't know if we just didn't get it in Canada, or maybe I was just too old to watch children's cartoons by that point. So I never saw it, so I was not exposed to this particular conditioning. But I guarantee you, I know people who have been exposed to this, because I deal with this mindset all the time, and in this article they provide some examples of that, and I just watched one of these clips about Captain Planet says, don't have too many kids, and it really truly is just absolutely blatant in its face. Overpopulation, Malthusian scaremongering of the worst variety. Too many people. So when you grow up, kids, remember to keep your family small. It's just absolute craziness, but Unfortunately, these are the kinds of messages that get embedded and stick and then get kind of pushed down into a core memory that you don't even know you have, so that you end up as an adult parroting all these things that you absorbed as a child that you don't even remember you got them from some stupid cartoon. Eventually you start to think, this is my ideology, I believe this, and I am convinced this is why I get so many vicious pushback emails anytime I suggest that humans are not a cancer on the planet, that we are not overpopulated, that the demographic crunch is coming, and that in fact, although a lot of people are like, good, let the population shrink, we need fewer people, what these people are imagining is that somehow the human population is going to shrink to some nice number, whatever that is, 1 billion, 500 million if you're following the Georgia Guidestones. Ted Turner, right? But it's just going to magically stabilize there somehow, and we're going to have all the exact level of industrial activity and everything with that magically smaller number that will just magically stabilize. Total nonsense. And I just reviewed a book in my summer reading list called After the Spike that, yes, unfortunately does have some mainstreamy kind of propaganda embedded in there, but is an excellent refutation of that kind of nonsense. Because no, when we get into the demographic crunch scenario, it is actually probably much more likely that we will just go extinct as a species, because there is a point at which you have civilizational collapse and population collapse that is not sustainable. There's no magic number. We're suddenly going to stabilize at a certain number. No, it just keeps shrinking. So we are facing the extinction of the human species, but I still get emails from people who undoubtedly watched Captain Planet as a kid and have that in the back of their minds. But no, I totally, for reasons that I, logic and evidence and reason and science, I believe that there are too many people on the Earth, James, and you're just weird because you don't believe this. Anyway, I think this is it's an important story because it's a window and insight into how people's core worldviews are formed. And yeah, I don't think it's a good thing that this is being rebooted. Hopefully it will be a ridiculous, stupid live-action reboot like all these other things they're doing that will be ignored and swiftly thrown into the dustbin of history. But actually, this article ends on an interesting note right after that last sentence you read. It says, though children's content from the 1990s is now often recreated and directed at adults. In other words, the new Captain Planet will probably be rewritten to target the same people who grew up with the old Captain Planet. Of course, this is nostalgia bait that's going to try to, hey, remember that Captain Planet you liked as a kid? Well, here it is again, and now it's, a new cool version. So, unfortunately, I think some people get caught in that propaganda matrix. If we can lure a few people out of that, at least get them to see the propaganda matrix, I think we will have done our job here.
I often like to joke that Gen X, we're the best. We're the best ones. I had heard it mentioned recently that also Gen X are the ones responsible for the whole nostalgia industrial complex. The reason why maybe people don't really grow up anymore and they stay rock and roll, punk rock, maybe when they're turning 48. And James, the idea that when you pare down those numbers, only the best, coolest, goodest people will be left too. Only the bad people, the losers, will have gotten rid of. And you're right, man. Ted Turner has always been based in Georgia. CNN, the CDC. Are there any known connections between him and the Guidestones? Or are you just making...
No, I have, so for people who really want the deep dive, I had an interview with a documentary filmmaker who did the deep dive and discovered and saw some of the documents and put the pieces together and unmasked the actual people behind the Guidestones. It wasn't Ted Turner, although there may have been Turner money involved. I don't remember it that well. It's called Dark Shadow Over Elberton, I believe was the name of that. Just look up Georgia Guidestones on CorbettReport.com and you can find that interview.
Okay, and maybe we can add something into the show notes. I was reminded very recently, I always do a lot of This Day in History on Morning Monarchy, it has been the anniversary of the destruction of the Georgia Guidestones very recently. And that's one of those stories, again, as we've noted, many decades happening in these recent weeks. I always wondered if it was, of course, probably someone like us went and blew the thing up. But they never got any suspects, they never had any leads, no arrests, nothing. Part of me wondered if it wasn't them that did it as a dog whistle, meaning it is full tilt boogie now. Here comes the scamdemic. We got a lot of good stuff coming up soon. And we can destroy the evidence that this is what we were following. I gotta admit, the X-Men and Batman animated series, those were on when I was probably almost in high school, but they were actually so good. It was like, oh, okay, I can still watch this cartoon and still be an adult teenager. Oh, good Lord. This is New World Next Week, and our third and final story takes us to San Francisco, and an article from their local KQED San Francisco-based Internet Archive is now a federal depository library. What does that mean? The San Francisco-based Internet Archive now has federal depository status, joining a network of over 1,100 libraries that archive government documents and make them accessible to the public, even as ongoing legal challenges pose an existential threat to the organization. California Senator Alex Padilla, recently seen getting arrested with Kristi Noem a few weeks ago, made the designation in a letter sent Thursday to the Government Publishing Office, who oversees the program. In the letter, shared exclusively with KQED, Padilla praised the Internet Archive for its digital focus and said it is leading the way when it comes to providing online library services. The Archive's digital-first approach makes it the perfect fit for a modern federal depository library, expanding access to federal government publications amid an increasingly digital landscape, Padilla said in a statement to KQED. The Internet Archive has broken down countless barriers to accessing information, and it is my honor to provide this designation to help further their mission of providing universal access to all knowledge. Under federal law, members of Congress can't just show up to ICE buildings and expect it to be let in like Alex Padilla and others did so they could cause a big show. Members of Congress, however, can designate up to two qualified libraries for federal depository status. Internet Archive founder Brewster Colley said that while the nonprofit org has always functioned as a library, this new designation makes it easier to work with the other federal depository libraries. I will include the old Wikipedia link. The Federal Depository Library Program was established by Congress in 1813 with the intention of ensuring that government records would be accessible to the American public. Maps, environmental reports, health studies, congressional records, newspapers, and books. These records can account for millions and millions of pages that could take up entire floors of physical public libraries. The organization has faced legal challenges over some of its archival practices, some of which we have reported for you here, right here on New World Next Week. Its Open Library was at the center of a years-long battle after the big four major publishers sued the Internet Archive for temporarily lifting its wait lists in 2020 instead of loaning its digital copies to one user at a time. This is the whole Baudrillard copy of a copy. They still want you to only have one digital copy of things at a time. That's always kind of blown my mind, James. By doing so, the publishers allege the Internet Archive illegally provided free ebooks. Last year, an appeals court upheld a 2023 federal court decision that ruled against the Internet Archive. The org has had to remove more than 500,000 titles since that lawsuit started. One of the other biggies, and this is the one that I love, the Great 78 Project, has Sony and Universal all suing Internet Archive, an initiative to preserve 78 RPM records, the old ones, the shellac ones. And of course, they immediately have to admit, most of these are public domain and they have no legal standpoint to argue about it. 4,000 of the 400,000 digitized recordings are copyrighted, including, of course, the greatest pop hit of all time, Bing Crosby's White Christmas. The organization could owe upwards of $700 million in damages if the labels win the lawsuit, a financial hit that would threaten to shut it down. And James, I mentioned many times, I feel like I covered the story as it was kind of happening on my Morning Monarchy. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of those four publishers. And you look and find that Sonia Sotomayor has a book deal with one of those publishers. It's like, how do SCOTUS judges get away with such massive conflict of interest? And is this part of essentially absorbing the Internet Archive into the gaping maw of the state, James? Is this another one? It's getting sent down the hallway in the warehouse and you'll never find the Ark of the Covenant again.
Yeah, you know, that's what it seems like at first glance, right? And I did see this story when it was first posted, and I did make a note of it, and I was like, so what does this actually mean? And, you know, are they being sucked into the U.S. government maw? Look, I am no expert on the actual law at stake, the Depository Library Program, but instead of, yeah, we'll link that Wikipedia. Let's link up 44 USC Section 19 itself as well, so people can actually read the actual law itself. From what I understand, essentially what this means is that the Internet Archive will have access, will be guaranteed access to certain documents that they were not guaranteed access to before, and they will be able to digitize that and make it available to people. So I do not believe, at least at first glance, it doesn't put any sort of other requirements on the Internet Archive, and it doesn't have to, or it doesn't allow the U.S. government to censor what the archive is doing, at least from what I understand of this. Maybe someone who has a more detailed legalistic understanding of this law will be able to say precisely what this means. But as far as I know, I don't think it changes fundamentally the operations of the archive. And yeah, you just recounting that lawsuit about the open library just brings back the flashback to when I was warning about the Library of Alexandria is on fire. And, you know, how true are those words? Just a couple of years ago, I remember if there was a book, I could look it up on the open library and I'd be able to find it and look through it and find that piece of information that's buried on page 372 of this book from 1938. And there it is. And okay, good. I've got that piece of information. But now it's much, much harder and many more books are not available. So, yay, mission accomplished, library burners. I'm sure the Fahrenheit 451, the good people were the firemen that were going around setting fire to all the libraries, right? Those were the good people. Anyway, here we are, dystopian 21st century, and man, we have had a cavalcade of bad stories this week, haven't we?
Hey, and remember, just a couple years ago, they, of course, rebooted Fahrenheit 451, because they have to constantly, again, reboot their propaganda. I mean, it's a good thing. I know I wasn't propagandized as a kid, and knowing is half the battle.
That's a load of rich, creamery butter.
So that story with the little... And again, isn't that a bigger difference? Because what's going to be on this new Netflix show? I mean, geez, they're gonna have transhumanist bits in there. So they're going to tell you, don't tell your kids, or don't tell your parents when you start taking puberty blockers. It's like, well, at least G.I. Joe was just telling me, hey, dummy, don't go run on the frozen lake. It might not be frozen. Whew. NewWorldNextWeek.com is your source for Media Monarchy and Corbett Report gear. We have those 2017 USB Corbett Report archives, and we got the backups in as well, so we have plenty in the house, and those are ready to ship at NewWorldNextWeek.com. You can also, of course, find some gear. It's usually all made in America, organic. Again, it would be very easy for us to just crank out a bunch of crap product, but those aren't made in a good way. So why could we run our mouths here about being good truthers and then support those kind of systems? So the quality is there. So I think you feel good when you're wearing Media Monarchy and Corbett Report gear. Castbot goes well out of her way to make sure we've sourced some of the best stuff around there. And I do play the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes after my Thursday morning monarchy. You can find that at mediamonarchy.com/listen. And James, I would note, I think aside from, yeah, I'll give you all your regular doomy news and the murder and mayhem and Trump and all that stuff, but I truly believe Media Monarchy is a music education for people. And yeah, there's lots of people out there who will say, I don't like music, which I don't really know what to do with that, James, but let me just throw one little nugget here of the kind of things that we talk about and learn and sort of know in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. Those 78 records, they're not vinyl, they are shellac, and they are very fragile. You can just push and shatter them. They are made from the excretions of the lac bug. So any 78s that you have, that is bug juice. That's crazy. I was also on a show called Eyes and Ears the other night. The Macro Monarchy Kingdom was the name of the episode, and it featured myself and actually got to meet Charlie Robinson of Macro Aggressions, and I learned dude is just up the road from me in Denver, so we kind of hit it off. So I would expect to see me and Charlie Robinson speaking again in the not too distant future. And a huge thanks to Charles for having me on Eyes and Ears. Again, I don't do a whole lot of media outreach, but I probably should. It'd be a great way to get more people to join the Media Monarchy Kingdom. James, there is New World next week, episode 599. Do you have big anniversary ideas for episode 600?
Not yet. Let's put our thinking caps on. We've got a week to put something together, I guess. But in the meantime, I am busily behind the scenes doing housekeeping, as it were, with regards to the massive data leak, which I just talked about at CorbettReport.com. So I'm fielding a lot of emails from people, obviously, understandably, and trying to get back to you as quickly as I can, and emailing everyone who was involved in this, and setting up an entirely new membership form. So at the moment, as I'm recording this anyway, there is no membership sign-up form at CorbettReport.com/members yet. Obviously, we have to implement a new form and test it and all of that. So, yay, fun in the ever-increasingly fun internet universe.
Let me quickly throw in, because I've been remiss lately. You know, I have the American Post Office box here. And we always put that address in the show notes for New World next week. It is at the bottom of every page at MediaMonarchy.com. If you don't do the digital money thing, we have the post office here in the States. You can send support to Media Monarchy. You can send support to Corbett Report. Now, this is not some mail mule where you send me crap and I have to mail it to Japan to James. That's not what we're doing. You send cash or check and then I divvy it up with James in Japan. And I think it works pretty well, man.
I think so, too. And as an added bonus, no one who signs up via the P.O. box was affected by this email leak. No one who signed up by Substack was affected. No one who signed up by crypto. It was only people who were on the membership form in the past year or so. Anyway, I am emailing people one by one, and we'll get through this. But thank you to all the people who do support, and yeah, especially people who are supporting through P.O. box. Good old-fashioned physical mail may actually be a solution that I might highlight in the future as something solutions watchy. In the meantime, I think we're going to leave it there, but we'll be back for NW number 600 in the very near future. Looking forward to it, buddy.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.
Take care.